Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 at 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai. Great new inventory. Fabulous pre-owned inventory. Now, that may fit your budget, maybe exactly what the doctor ordered for you. And great trade-ins, sales staff that works with you, and a service department that just for years to come, you can rely on. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Our play-by-play call of the day.
And Mike Krzyzewski is saying that, what a play, Wiles. Boy, that is just strength right there. I mean, that's just a bully job right in the middle. Just threw right over the top and got fouled, and Ty Washington was the one that hit the deck.
College basketball is back. It is indeed back. All right. So that we now bring in. With the football going on and the basketball opener tonight, we bring in Nate Bauer from On3.com and Blue White Illustrated. Sir, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me. What's going on?
If I knew, I'd tell you. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. All right.
That makes two of us.
So we'll do a little combo football basketball here.
Okay.
So let's start with the football part. You know, what did you see, especially in the second half of that game on Saturday at Maryland?
Yeah, I mean, look, like, I think that I've gotten to the point where I'm not waiting for Penn State's offense to break out anymore, right? Like, this just kind of is who they are. And so I thought the inconsistency of the first half, you know, it's not like it was dramatically improved in the second half. It's just Jahan Dotson went 86
yeah.
for a touchdown, right? Like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Maryland had a lapse on that play. And, really, that was a situation where Penn State had just taken a sack. I mean, it was second and 17, I think,
yes,
on that
was.
Play.
It was.
And so, in a 14-14 game. So what had been really kind of a tenuous situation turned into obviously a Penn State, you know, 7-point advantage there. And then they were able to take advantage of it, get another field goal. And then obviously Jair Brown finishes the game. But no, I mean, look, like there is no getting around the reality that everything for this team has been an uphill climb this season. Right, like there are not easy wins for this team on the schedule. Which is not to say that they can't win plenty of games. They've already done it. They have done well in the face of uphill climbs. It remains a truth that nothing is going to come easy for these guys.
Are we talking enough about Dotson?
No. He, look. Two things. One is he catches everything.
Mm-hmm.
That is, to me, the most underappreciated aspect of his game is that if it's in the vicinity, he's coming down with it. Like, he doesn't have drops.
Right.
The ball doesn't hit him, right? Which is not something that you can say about everybody. So that's a huge thing. But then the second thing, and this is what really kind of stood out to me, is I saw, and I don't know what you saw, because the television replay did not show it to me, but on the 86-yard touchdown, I saw a burst of speed right around midfield that I had not seen from him before. Right?
See what happens when he hit midfield, that burst, because he's in the 4.3s now when he runs. But he had a burst, and that helped set up the block that Theo Johnson made.
Correct. He should have been tackled on that play. He should not have been able to take it the distance. And so that, to me, was yet another indication of how he has actually developed. He has clearly developed physically in his time at Penn State, because the early storyline from James Franklin, his freshman and really sophomore years, were how much progress he needed to make. That he needed to get bigger, he needed to get stronger, he needed to get faster. And, you know, by every appearance, he has done those things.
Right, exactly. He has done that. And he's obviously in sync with Sean Clifford. There's no question about that. The defense, we've talked about this before. It's now 5 takeaways in the red zone this year.
Yep.
They've got more field goals against them than touchdowns in the red zone this year. You're facing a team this week, by the way, kicks a lot of red zone field goals, 17 of them out of 42.
Yep.
What are you seeing from this team when they're back, and the field also shortens up?
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was going to say. They are the definition of bend but don't break. They will let you move the ball between the 20s. They are not going to let anything get behind them. I mean, I really cannot think of, other than maybe a garbage time touchdown here or there, but I cannot think of many many long touchdown passes, right, against this that have gone for a touchdown. You know, obviously Ohio State had at least one, the Castro Fields, but just in general, that has been a pretty consistent element to this team, is that, yeah, they will let you get to the red zone, the fringe red, and then they will shut you down. They will take the ball away. They limit your options, and I mean, look, it's not a coincidence at this point. The sample size is very much large enough to understand that that's kind of who and what these guys are.
All right, so Michigan comes in here. We don't know who for Michigan's coming in here, because they had a few guys go out of their last game with Indiana. Yep. When you've watched Michigan this year, what have you thought?
Yeah, I mean, my question is always about the quarterback. I understand that their strength, right? They've got two running backs who play off of each other very well, and that is something that Penn State happens to be fairly efficient at and good at, is stopping the run. I mean, I understand. I will maintain that even after the Illinois loss for Penn State, it's still a pretty good run defense. And Illinois only scored 10 points in regulation off of its 350-yard day on the ground. So if that's what Michigan's approach is going to be, is to just pound Penn State to death on the ground, that's not necessarily the be-all, end-all of how this game winds up. And so I've run a couple of numbers, and the thing that's interesting to me about this Michigan offense is their scoring average, I think, is 37 a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's skewed by the non-conference.
Yeah, no question. No question.
The average, I think, is 30.8 in Big Ten games, which is still pretty good.
It's good.
But that's I think a legitimate thing to wonder is, okay, what does that 31 a game translate to at Beaver Stadium against this Penn State defense? Because to me, it suggests pretty strongly that, you know, you're going to see this is another game ripe for 24-21, right? Like something. I mean, if I'm looking at the over/under, I'm hammering the under on this game. I don't think there are a ton of points to be had for either one of these offenses. But, you know, and again, like, same deal with McNamara, is game manager, has done a really nice job this season of not losing games for Michigan.
Right.
And so, and you know, that is something that Penn State has typically this season done fairly well with defensively.
What is this over-under you speak of? No. All right. what is that? Basketball, the Micah Shrewsbury era opens tonight.
Yep.
And you know, it's interesting because you're going to have, you know, because Dick and I were talking about this, and this will actually be something we talk about in the pregame. John Hara, Seth Lundy, Miles Dredd are on their third coaches in 3 years. And Sam Sessoms is on his fourth.
Yep.
And they have all hung in there and stayed. And I think there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, no question. I mean, certainly John had options. Miles, you know, I never got the sense that Miles looked around.
No, I didn't get that sense either, no.
Yeah, you know, Sam is a guy, right? Like, he had just transferred. So to transfer again, I don't think. Yeah. But your point is well taken. I mean, I think certainly this is I'm just trying to be realistic with people about what this team is, because I think there are some exciting pieces for people that have intrigue.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, Jalen Pickett is a good basketball player. That's a big addition for Penn State.
Yep.
But you know, there are some limitations in the roster. Greg Lee being hurt for this game and to start the season does not help Penn State.
No.
That is a major, major issue.
No question.
Given the fact, right, like John Hara can play 24 minutes a game. So you got to figure out what to do with those other 16 in terms of a big body. If there's a time for it, the beginning of the season is it. Right, you don't want that in the Big Ten. So if they can get him back, then maybe they're in a little bit better shape.
Yep.
But you know, it's a team that is curious to me in that it has the potential to have hot nights.
Yep.
I just think that there's a counter to that, which is something that we are extremely familiar with, which is, you know, there are going to be nights where it doesn't happen, where it's not happening.
Right.
And a streaky shooting team can find itself in a jam.
Right.
So,
and there's another part, too. They don't have the team speed that they've had the last 3 or 4 years where you could really translate a lot of defense into offense.
Yep. Yep. And you know, and I think that Micah Shrewsbury said it on Monday in his press conference. They're not trying to do that.
Exactly. No. And part of this is, look, with Greg not there, they have to protect John.
Yep. Yep. And so it is a lot of half-court defense, trying to be better on the perimeter, fewer steals, you know, just less of that transition, and then get guys open shots. And you know, I think that Micah Shrewsbury has a history of allowing for that to happen. I think this is a system that will create open shots.
No doubt.
But you got to make them.
Yeah.
You got to make them. And, like, that is the one thing.
That has been my experience, that if you have an open shot, you have to make it.
We make these things so complicated. And, you know, I mean, even with Pat Chambers, I mean, I very frequently think of some of the critiques of, well, you know, that they're not scoring. Well, if the shot is open,
yeah,
that's coaching.
I know
that is college basketball.
Exactly,
getting an open shot.
That's why I always love the post game thing. The person that tries to be the brains of the tailgate will then start talking about scheme, and they have no idea what the scheme is. It's like, okay, there you go. It's a scheme.
Yep.
Okay. Well, why don't you? Let's get a whiteboard here. Why don't you show me what the scheme is?
Yep.
I'm going to get a beverage. My friend, always a pleasure. You know that.
I'll see you tonight.
I'll see you tonight. I'm looking forward to seeing you tonight.
Yeah, it will be good to be back in the Bryce Jordan Center. Last year was a slog.
I know.
I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, it's always great to see as many human beings as possible out there. Believe me.
Yeah, no doubt.
I thought I was the issue. I said, I've cleared out stadiums and arenas all over the country here. I was getting to the point where I thought it was. And you know what? Jack and Dick never countered that. All right, so...
Well, allow me to be the nice guy.
That's right.
Not you.
Sir, thank you.
All right, you got it. See ya.
All right, great to have you with us. We'll talk about the Eagles in the final half hour. I know the burning question for many of you out there is why. I got it. Well, Matt sets these things up because, I mean, most of the show is just about what Matt wants to hear. And, you know, I wanted to talk sports, and he wants to talk about the Eagles. I'm like, I don't know.
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
There was a movie on today, Enemy of the State. It was a story about Ward 4. All right, so...
Oh, my almighty!
All right. Ah, mercy me. Thought I would throw that in there. By the way, Odell Beckham Jr. considering Kansas City, Green Bay, New Orleans. Okay.
Yeah, that's no surprise.
Again, I wouldn't go after him only... I don't...
He's a pain in the rear end? Yeah.
Well, no, I don't play that game that you play. I'm like, what does he add? He doesn't add anything.
That too, yes.
I mean, I'm about what does somebody add? He didn't add anything. He is very much a station to station receiver. There are a whole bunch of those out there. I mean, there's somebody who followed the Giants for a long time. He made that great catch against Dallas. But if you really watch his last 2 years of the Giants, station to station to station to station, it's like, okay. That's what he's been. And that's, to me, why there's a certain point where you become just another guy. And I think what's happened with him is he has transitioned to become, quote, just another guy in a lot of ways. Doesn't mean he doesn't have a talent. Doesn't mean that he can't every once in a while do something special. But for the most part, he's become just another guy out there. And I think that's the problem he has with in terms of interest out there. To go with what you're talking about, I have no idea what he's like in the locker room or anything. I don't know. I'm not even going to pretend I know. You start doing that, and, you know, well, you know, I hear he's like, you don't hear him. You don't know. I always love when somebody says, well, I hear. Like, you do? Really? Who'd you hear from? Adam Schefter? What? Who'd you hear from? I hear. Really? Hear from what? All right. So here we are waiting. By the way, Pitt plays tomorrow night, by the way. They play North Carolina tomorrow night. That's actually a pretty good game tomorrow. Cincinnati will play South Florida on Friday night. And Cincinnati is, I've never seen this before. They're a 1 billion point favorite. I don't think they're going to, you know, I mean, that's hard to cover. Just kidding. But that is... So you got two good college games, especially Pitt, North Carolina, I think is actually a really good game tomorrow night. I think. North Carolina's coming off that 58-55 win over Wake Forest. And Pitt really hasn't played anybody. And they lost to a depleted Miami team. They lost to Western Michigan. They're like, okay.
But yeah, they're in the top 25 in college football playoff ranking.
Do you think, to be honest with you, do you really think the committee outside of the first eight teams is paying attention to what they do 9 through 25? Please.
Valid point, but still.
I mean, they're not paying attention to that because it doesn't matter. Suppose they like the top 12 matters because of the agreements with the New Year's Six bowl games. After that, whatever.
But just for argument's sake, a loss to Western Michigan at home, to me, is a worse loss than Illinois at home. Just saying.
Illinois is two wins away from a bowl game.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show is brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best of new inventory, great pre-owned inventory. That may be exactly what the budget says. Well, as the Sunbury Motors guarantee, that means a lot. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Let's go to Philadelphia. John Clark joins us. John, how have you been?
Hey, been doing great. How about you?
Doing great. Thanks for asking. Well, John, the Eagles are interesting. They seem, for the most part, good enough to be competitive, not quite enough to get over the top in some games. Is that a fair assessment of where they are?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think the offense has improved, especially with them running the ball more. I think it's taken some pressure off Jalen Hurts to do everything. You've seen the last couple weeks, his accuracy is up. He's completing, you know, like 64% of his passes now. It was much lower in the weeks leading up to it. So I think running the ball has opened up some things for him, and play action, I think, has really helped the offense. And then you see him, they're kind of just letting him go. When you have a third and four and he's able to run it, he converted five third downs this past Sunday. So I think the offense is improving. I think Jalen and Nick are kind of coming together a little bit more on what's best for the offense and Jalen. But the defense, not so much.
Now, I'll stay on offense for a moment, then, John, I'll get to that defense. Early in the season, they shied away from running. Now, look, you and I both know sometimes it's what they give you, and you just go with what they give you. But why do you think they are running the ball more now?
I really think it's because it wasn't working as well. I don't think Jalen Hurts is the most accurate quarterback, and he's going to miss some throws and in key situations. And I think they said, okay, we need to take a little bit off of him. I mean, he was providing 85% of the offense, most in the NFL. So mm-hmm. I think having a supportive running game really just helps open things up a little more. I mean, play action is huge. If you can get teams inching those safeties up to the line of scrimmage and the other team is thinking run and you got them coming in more to try to stop the run, I think that opens up things a little bit more. We all know in 2021, most of these teams that are in first place or playoff teams or successful have really good quarterbacks, and most of the teams mm-hmm. throw the ball. But there's a couple teams who are able to have success running the ball more, like the Titans. And Jalen Hurts is not on that level of these top quarterbacks with his accuracy to run that type of offense. I think Nick Sirianni came in wanting to run that. I mean, he was throwing 75 to 80% of the time, but I think they just realized what's the most effective way to have an offense that can go up and down the field, have some long drives, and by the way, keep the other offense off the field because the defense has problems.
Right. So, Lionel, let's get to that last snippet there. The defense has problems. Is it really starting with linebacker, or is there an across-the-board three-level problem here?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I think T.J. Edwards is playing better. I think Davion Taylor is learning, and he's making some good plays here and there. But I think it's, look, all their money is in the defensive line. Their highest paid player is Fletcher Cox. They lost Brandon Graham. The only way this defense is going to be effective is if they're getting after the quarterback. And three of the last four games, they haven't had a sack. And I know they're saying, hey, the quarterbacks are getting the ball out quick. And you see Justin Herbert getting the ball out quick. But if your line is unable to get after the quarterback, then you got to find other ways to get to the quarterback. And, you know, Jonathan Gannon did change it up. He blitzed about one-third of the time in this past game, mostly in the beginning. He also played cover one more than any team in the NFL this past week, where he only had one safety back there. So he is changing it up. But my thing is, if you're having the quarterback get the ball out quick, maybe the cornerbacks should play a little more press coverage. Get up there and jam the receivers. If you want the quarterback to have to hold the ball a little bit longer, you need to have your corners not play off as much, in my opinion. So maybe we'll see a little more of that. But, look, I don't think there's going to be a problem this weekend because Teddy Bridgewater tends to hold on to the ball a little bit longer. They like to throw the ball a little bit down the field. And, you know, I think that might play into the Eagles' hands.
Bridgewater's also, for the most part, like he and Tyrod Taylor are very similar in that they are accurate. They don't make a lot of mistakes, but they're also not risk takers either. So you've got to play good down and distance, keep the ball in front of you when you play guys like that. Are the Eagles good at playing down and distance and keeping the ball in front?
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, they're most of the time up until the last game or two, they were playing the two safeties way back, soft zone coverage where you're basically trying to avoid giving up the big play. But then sometimes you've got too many intermediate routes and production there from the team. And then also, you know, teams were taking some shots. And, you know, the Eagles secondary, I think they're strong at a couple spots, but they're, you know, just not good enough and really don't have like a real big playmaker back there. I mean, Slay does a good job. But I don't think they have a real playmaker back there that's going to make that pivotal game-changing play.
Fletcher Cox, is he banged up or has he lost a step?
Well, I just did a podcast interview today with former Eagles president Joe Banner, and from what he's seen last year and this year, he believes Fletcher's on the decline, and that could be. Yeah. And when you lose Brandon Graham, you're going to be able to double-team somebody on the Eagles' defensive line more and more. And if that's Fletcher some plays and then Javon Hargrave some plays, you need your ends to get home more. And when they lost Brandon Graham, you know, they're just not getting after the quarterback as much. So from the football experts and the people who watch the film and study it, they do believe Fletcher Cox is on the decline. So, yeah, that's the problem. He's your highest-paid player, and he gave them a lot during the Super Bowl run and the year after. But last couple years, he hasn't been as productive, and that is a big problem.
Yeah, no, it is, because there's a domino to it. And if he's not playing as well or doesn't command as much of attention, now it actually affects your linebackers, because in some ways that defensive lineman acts like interference and a blocker for guys like that, and he's not doing that anymore.
Yeah, and look, like we said, all the money is in the defensive line. And if the defensive line is not pressuring the quarterback, and I'm not even talking about sacks, I'm talking about pressure, hurries, getting the quarterback off his spot, they're not good enough with the back seven. They're not good enough to stop quarterbacks from doing whatever they want to do.
I have to ask you about Devontae Smith.
But that being said, let me just say this. I mean, they have faced some of the better quarterbacks in the NFL, and you're going to start to see this schedule loosen up. Teddy Bridgewater this weekend, then the Saints come in. It could be Trevor Siemian. Who knows? And then you got five games against the Giants, Washington, and the Jets. Five games against those teams. And that's where you can make up some ground. And I expect them to be better against those teams, because those teams aren't any good. So they've gone through the really tough part of their schedule, and it's going to ease up here, and they're not going to be facing the same quality quarterbacks.
Right. I have to ask you about Devontae Smith. It's one guy to see. It's one thing, John, to see a guy on TV like we did for 4 years at Alabama, and you're like, wow, phenomenal. But then to see him in person. You see him in person. What are you seeing with him?
Yeah, I got to tell you, he's really fun to watch. You know, I was at the Sixers game last night. Tyrese Maxey is now one of my favorite players to watch, and I would put Devontae up there. What's amazing to me is you see him come out of the tunnel, and he really is thin, and his legs are really thin. But, man, he is so talented and so gifted coming off that line of scrimmage, and his route running is so good. It's really impressive to watch. And it is a shame that he was not able to connect with Jalen Hurts, or Jalen wasn't able to connect with him on that touchdown before the end of the first half. Yeah. That would have been huge for that game. And those are the little things. But, yeah, I think Devontae Smith, I think he's going to be special. He's on pace for a 1,000-yard season, and you're seeing it already. He's got his second 100-yard game. Those connections him and Jalen made in the second half against the Chargers, those were sweet. So I just think he's really, really good. Really good with his route running. And, you know, you saw some of those plays earlier in the year where he got pushed out of bounds or Rager got pushed out of bounds, and they seem to have cleaned that up. So I think the offense is going to get better as we go along here, especially against inferior teams. So, but I think if you're looking for the positives, you know, you've got a bunch of years coming up with Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, hopefully Miles Sanders. We'll see if they would get a contract with him after next year. But you do have the start of some foundational pieces for your offense going forward.
So you mentioned Tyrese Maxey. What makes him one of your favorites to watch?
Oh, man. First of all, the kid is out there having fun. He is smiling the whole time. His hair is flying all over the place. And when you're watching him live, he is so quick, so fast. And he's fearless. Like, you see him especially last night where they were like, hey, this could be the Tyrese Maxey show. He was fearless going to the basket. And from talking to the team and Doc Rivers and the players, they can't keep him out of the gym. He constantly wants to learn and get better. They basically had to take the ball away from him and say, go home. You need a day here to just decompress. So he's got the work ethic. I think he's going to be special. And you see him working on his shot. You see him working on his three-point shot, and he's getting better. We see that he can go to the basket. He can get to the basket. And he is lightning quick in person. So I think this guy is special, and I think, as you see, the Phillies falling in love with him already.
So I have to ask you, the mental makeup of a team. I mean, look, I think a lot of those guys expected to go into the season and not have Ben Simmons, you know, over the summer. Well, they don't have Ben Simmons. I mean, he's not there. What's the mental makeup of this team that's allowed them to get off to a really good start and just kind of take all this stuff and just brush it aside?
I think it starts with your leaders. And Joel Embiid spoke a week or two ago about he's trying to have this team go out to dinner together before every game on the road. And he says this team is really close and they like each other. They talked about the chemistry being so good and the togetherness. And I got to tell you, I mean, it does kind of send a message to Ben Simmons, because they've constantly said, we have been so together ever since we came together as a group. And that obviously does not include Ben Simmons. So, I think they made some great additions as well. I mean, George Niang, not only has he been really good shooting the three especially, but he's an energy guy. He's good for the locker room. And same with Andre Drummond. And then you see these younger players getting better. So I think it's a really good mix. I think the pieces they picked up have worked out really well. And I think they're sending a message that if you don't want to be a part of this, then we don't need you. And look, I think they are better offensively without Ben. They're not as good defensively, but I think they're better offensively, right. And they're more together. They have more spacing on the court, and you're playing 5-on-5.
He may be the brother, but Seth Curry has come in, and every time I look around, as a piece, not as a primary, but as a piece, he does his deal. He's 17 points a game, John. How valuable is this guy as somebody who understands what his role is?
Hey, I mean, he got a chance to start for the first time last year, basically on a regular basis, and you saw what he did in the playoffs, how hot he got, and then he was doing the same thing again to start this season. He's developing. He's getting better. And, you know, I think he's getting good coaching, but, you know, he is a starter now in this league, and the way he's able to shoot the ball up until the last two games, I mean, he was the best shooting, small in the NBA, not a big. You know, the big can obviously have a higher shooting percentage, but he was shooting a better percentage than anybody in the NBA that was not a big guy. So I think it's great to see this evolution of him, and he's finally getting that chance to start in the NBA. And, hey, you got two games, brother against brother, coming up here towards the end of this month of December, so we're going to get to see Steph versus Seth again. It's going to be fun.
John, fun for us to have you. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Have a good one.
John Clark, NBC Sports Philly. We'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
We were at the holiday party a couple of years ago, and this started to play, and the suit starts the moonwalk.
You sure that wasn't me, though, to be fair?
Did you end up on the floor?
No, that's a good point.
It was the suit. It was the suit.
All right. S-U-I-T, that spells suit. Ah!
Hey. There's certain indicators as to how it finishes, as to who it was.
on the deck. Call the janitor.
Roz, we got sent the question about, you know, Jack saying reading the keys. You could do that in life, too.
Very, very true.
When does Sugarland Me basketball season start?
Early December, I believe.
Because I know several people on the staff were asking about that, because he'll leave early from the station to go. All right, so that's a personal thing.
Oh, my almighty!
All right. So Penn State will play Saturday, Michigan. I talked about this earlier. We talked about Penn State's ability. They've given up 22 scores. And 12 have been field goals, 10 touchdowns, and they have the 5 takeaways. Michigan, and McNamara for the most part takes good care of the ball. And in the red zone, they're 42 of 45. On the surface, fabulous. 25 of those are touchdowns. You're saying, wait a minute, 42, 20. There's 17 field goals. They have kicked a lot of field goals in the red zone this year. So they've been able to drive the ball, get to a point, but the ability to take it all the way home is something that can be debated. Now, Jake Moody has been tremendous. I mean, when I talk about they've hit 17 field goals, he's had 17 attempts. And I go back to the Michigan State game where it was the end of the first half, and
Mel Tucker used all three of his timeouts, and each time Moody kicked the ball, and each time he made it, and then they finally were out of timeouts, and he had to kick it for real, and he made that. He went 4 for 4. So the guy has been that way, and he's been that good under the category of credit where credit is due. It's just Penn State needs to have them get field goals when they finally do drive it in there, if they can't get a takeaway. And it goes back to the old, and I used this in the Cotton Bowl with Memphis. I said, Joe Paterno always told us it takes 3 field goals to beat a touchdown. And if you recall, in the Cotton Bowl game with Memphis, Memphis only scored 3 touchdowns in that game. Penn State scored 7. 7 touchdowns. Penn State had 7 touchdowns and a field goal. Memphis had 5 field goals and 3 touchdowns. Now, I'm not recommending that you give up the 3 touchdowns, but if you can keep, if Michigan drives the ball, you need them to finish with field goals, which has been a part of actually their MO this year. Yeah, I think it's something that, you know, unless you're there breaking down opponents like we have to break down opponents before you get to broadcast the game. You know, there's certain things maybe you could pick up as you watch games, so forth. We actually have to break it down and really look to see, okay, good, bad, okay, got to worry about that, whatever. That's the one thing I noticed right away. They'll move, but then they get to a point and they've stalled, not every time because they have 25 touchdowns, but 17 field goals, that's a lot. That's 2 per game in the red zone. All right. Back tomorrow. Look forward to it. Thanks for being with us today. Our thanks to John Clark and Nate Power on News Radio 1070 WKOK.